The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trump, and I'm your host, Katie Trump. I don't know what that was yesterday. That was a terrible game. I will say, I told you I was rooting against New England in this one. I was rooting for Seattle in this one. So in the fourth quarter, I did have some fun with the way things were ending up. There was one point in this game I'm like, is the kicker going to be the MVP? Because that's never happened, and that looks like that was about to happen. I mean, that is the Super Bowl we all deserved for this season, simply because that's how this whole season has gone. I've said it on multiple occasions throughout this entire NFL season that this has been the weirdest motherfucking season in a long-ass time, or at least that I can remember, and that Super Bowl was basically how that summed up the season for me. I mean, like I said, New England had no business being there. Let's just go ahead and get that out there, first of all. Like I said on Friday's show, I was trying not to down-talk New England too much and sound like a hater. But I think we all now see that they really had no business being here. And I was talking about how they had a whole lot of luck getting there. But if you ain't got the talent and a good team, you're going to get your ass pounded. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, this actually would have been an even bigger ass-kicking had the New England Patriots, if they didn't have Christian Gonzalez, because Christian Gonzalez was basically the only dude who had a good game for the Patriots yesterday. He actually locked down a couple of big passes yesterday that could have ended up for 7 points, and we'd be talking about an even bigger ass-kicking today. So Christian Gonzalez, he was the best thing out there for the New England Patriots, but that was literally, I'm not even exaggerating, that was the worst offensive performance in Super Bowl history. That was so terrible. I actually do feel bad for Drake May, because everybody's putting it on him, and I've said it all season, as a matter of fact, this New England Patriots offense does not have a lot of weapons for Drake May. So I already told you on Friday's show, basically what I predicted is almost what happened, other than DeMarcus Lawrence. He didn't get the MVP, but he did have a good-ass game. Basically, I said special teams was going to rule, and the Seahawks special teams was going to be the difference. Turns out it was. Because that field goal kicker, he could have been the MVP. Even, as a matter of fact, if you ask me who should have been the MVP, it should have been him. It did go to Kenny Walker, the running back, because he ended up with over 100 yards. He had 135 yards rushing, and then he had over 20 yards receiving. So he obviously, and he made the big plays. He was the only dude on the Seahawks offense doing anything yesterday, too, because that Seahawks offense really didn't want to score a touchdown at all, and we did not get our first touchdown until the fourth quarter. That's how terrible this game was. But, I mean, just on the offensive side of the ball for New England especially, it is literally going to go down in history as one of the worst offensive performances ever. Also, fun little fact, if you are a New England Patriots hater like I am, even though they do have the most Super Bowls of all time, one with six, now they are the team with the most Super Bowl losses with 5. They now have eclipsed both the Bills and the Vikings. They have 4 losses, but they're 0-4, so that looks still is terrible, whereas the Patriots are now 6-5 in Super Bowl. So they do have the most Super Bowl losses, if you want to look at that as a little bright spot as a hater, which some of us will. But I mean, yesterday it was a defensive battle. And it was actually kind of funny that it ended up being a defensive battle, because a lot of people forget about defense. A lot of people don't realize that defense wins championships. It's not just a saying. If you actually do watch football, and especially playoff football, defense does win you championships. And yesterday it proved that this Seattle Seahawks defense, it sucks that the whole defense couldn't win the MVP, because this Seahawks defense was suffocating. They would not let Drake May get a second. I mean, this New England defense or offense did not even get into Seattle territory until the fourth quarter. They played three quarters without even getting into Seattle territory, even to remotely sniff a field goal, let alone attempt a field goal. That's how killer the Seahawks defense was yesterday. They had six sacks, two interceptions, two forced fumbles, and one fumble that went for a touchdown. And it was insane to watch. It was awesome to watch, though, too. I love seeing defense like that. And don't get me wrong, the New England defense actually did show out as well. That Seattle offense, especially Sam Darnold, he had no time. Honestly, Sam Darnold, in my opinion, was just playing not to fuck up the game, especially once they got into the red zone. You could tell he was like, you know what? We just need these field goals. Our defense is going to handle it. If we just keep getting the points when we get into the red zone, we're going to win. And they did end up winning. They got the win 29-13. Like I said, the fourth quarter actually ended up pretty hilarious because, you know, New England actually hadn't even scored a point yet. My fingers were crossed that they were not going to score a point and be the only Super Bowl of all time that they don't score a point. But they did. They ended up with some points. So they saved themselves there. But, I mean, in this fourth quarter sequence, though, after they scored their first touchdown, they're feeling themselves. And Seattle's defense is like hell to the no. They came back out, intercepted the ball, and then they came back out again and forced a fumble and ran it back for a touchdown. And really, I mean, Seattle was in control of this game from start to finish, and that was really just all it was. Like I said, Jason Myers, the kicker for the Seattle Seahawks, he actually has a Super Bowl record now. He went 5 for 5 on his kicks, and that is actually the most kicks a kicker has ever made in Super Bowl history with 5. So he, even though he didn't get MVP, which, like I said, that's who the MVP should have been. There were three quarters where it was 12-0. For Christ's sakes, this dude was the only one doing anything. So, but they weren't giving that MVP to a kicker. No way. But he did get a Super Bowl record, and he does get a Super Bowl win. So, congratulations to the Seattle Seahawks. I mean, what a turnaround for them. And congratulations to Sam Darnold. I mean, what a turnaround for him. But it was just, they dominated in all three phases of the game, all season long. This team was spectacular on defense. Very good on offense and spectacular on special teams. Even though Rashid Shaheed didn't really get a chance to do anything yesterday, like I said, Jason Myers, their kicker, went 5 for 5. So their special teams really came into play yesterday. Really is actually the reason why they won yesterday. I mean, their punter, he was another dude who had a big game. He was, every time he came out to punt, he pretty much set the Patriots up way back. I mean, there was a couple of times where they were at like the 5-yard line, the 3-yard line, and shit was not going well for them. So this was an absolutely dominating game from the Seahawks. And the Patriots just looked terrible. And so, like I said, if you are a Patriot hater, you really had a fun time. Now, if you are just a person who doesn't really watch football, but you just watched the Super Bowl yesterday, you probably thought this was like the worst game of all time. And you are correct, because it was not really a good game just to watch. But that is how the season ends, and I'm not shocked, because it was a weirdo-ass season, and that is how it should end. And now, it is on to the off-season. Actually, it's now on to the worst time of year for sports fans, called Sports Fan Purgatory, where we have no football, and we have no baseball. And then basketball is going to go here into the All-Star break here this coming weekend, and it's just going to be very, very quiet sports-wise. But now, we are headed into the off-season. Free agency is going to be kicking off here in a couple of weeks. The draft is right around the corner in a couple of months. You're going to be hearing a lot about, we've already started hearing about what's going to happen with Max Crosby, what's going to happen with George Pickens, what's going to happen with a lot of players, Kirk Cousins. So there's going to be a lot, of course, in the offseason, but that was how this weirdo-ass season ended, Super Bowl 60. That is actually how it should have ended, is a weirdo-ass win that none of us predicted, with the New England Patriots shit in the bed like that. So that was Super Bowl 60, and that was the end of our 2025-2026 season. Weird, weird, weird. All the way weird, from week one all the way down to Super Bowl 60. All right, so let's move on to basketball and the top 10 NBA power rankings this week, and we do have us, finally, a new number one, because it's almost like I predicted this. I didn't want to predict this, but I did mention that basically the only way the Oklahoma City Thunder are going to really start falling for me is if they not only go on a losing streak, but if they lose SGA, that's going to be an issue. And unfortunately, SGA is injured. It doesn't look like it's going to be a big deal, but we don't know yet. But our new number one this week is the Detroit Pistons. Detroit basketball, y'all. They are 38-13 on the regular season, 7-3 in their last 10 games. This past week, they beat the Denver Nuggets, somehow lost to the Washington Wizards, and then kicked the crap out of the New York Knicks. And this team, I'm just telling you, all-around excellent team. They are top 10 in all the offensive categories, and they are first in steals, first in blocks. I mean, they're just an overall excellent team. They're dominating the paint. Cade Cunningham, he's their superstar. He shows out every single game. You got Durant showing out every single game. And this Detroit Pistons team just keeps elevating themselves above every single team in the Eastern Conference and is even kicking the ass out of some teams in the Western Conference. So they are now the new number one, at least for this week, on the top 10 NBA power rankings. Then at number two, we have the San Antonio Spurs. They are 36-16 on the season. They are 7-3 in their last 10 games. This past week, they beat the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Dallas Mavericks twice. And, you know, we can always focus on Victor Wembanyama, but I'm trying, because, you know, I tend to watch a lot of Spurs games since I live here in Austin. I do catch a lot of Spurs games. I'm actually kind of, don't tell any Lakers fans, but I kind of root for the Spurs sometimes. I like to watch the Spurs. I've just always respected them. And I'm seeing a lot from some of these young cats that they got. And Stephon Castle, I've actually been a fan of his since last year. And I've looked at him and I'm like, man, this guy looks like he's going to be something. Not a lot of people are talking about him, but to me, he looks like he's going to be that dude. And this past weekend, he did something that no San Antonio Spur has ever done. He becomes the youngest dude to have a triple-double. I can't remember his age, but it doesn't matter. He's the youngest San Antonio Spur to have a triple-double, in which he went for 40 points, 12 rebounds, and 12 assists. So it wasn't even just like a barely triple-double. It was a dominating triple-double. And that's what I'm saying, though. Stephon Castle, I feel like he is that other guy. It's Wemby, Castle, and then probably Fox. And then you've got all these other guys around him, like Keldon Johnson. It's just, looking at the Spurs team, and they're just building something really solid over here. And we'll see what happens with the second half of the season, if they could keep it up. But they definitely are dominating right now. Then at number three on my top 10 NBA power rankings of the Oklahoma City Thunder, overall record of 40-13. They're 5-5 in their last 10 games. This past week, they beat the Orlando Magic, lost to the San Antonio Spurs, and then lost to the Houston Rockets. And this team, it's just, they have no SGA. He got injured last week. And they've lost two games he has not played in, and they're going to reassess him, they said, after the All-Star break. So it's not looking like it's going to be a big deal, but it also could be a big deal. So we'll see how that goes. But the Oklahoma City Thunder, kind of on a little bit of a losing streak right now, but I expect them to continue to dominate. I mean, they still have the best record in the league. It's just the injuries might catch up to you, and when your star player goes out, that usually is a problem. Then at number four on my top 10 NBA power rankings of the New York Knicks, overall record of 34-19. They are 9-1 in their last 10 games, and this past week they beat the Washington Wizards, the Denver Nuggets, finally lost to the Detroit Pistons. As a matter of fact, they got their asses beat by the Detroit Pistons, but they were on a 9-game winning streak up until that point, and then they beat the Boston Celtics yesterday. They basically got their revenge. They got their ass beat by the Pistons earlier in the week, but then they kicked the crap out of the Celtics yesterday. So they kind of got back on course yesterday, but that's just kind of the thing with the Knicks. You just don't know what you're going to get from them. And even though they're on a 9-game winning streak, I kind of hesitated to put them in there, but I mean, you got to give them respect with what they're doing. And I mean, overall as a team, they just look really good. It's just, they have their down moments and they just look really bad when they have their down moments. But once again, like I continue to say about the Eastern Conference, it's pretty much the Detroit Pistons. That's really the only other team you got to worry about. And I feel like they could get through everybody else. So if they just keep on building throughout the season, they should be able to compete. But Detroit is definitely going to be difficult to beat. Then at number five on my top 10 NBA power rankings, the Boston Celtics, overall record of 34-19. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games. This past week, they beat the Dallas Mavericks, the Houston Rockets, the Miami Heat, and then lost to the New York Knicks. They actually traded for Nikola Vucevic this week, and that's really just to shore up the paint, kind of take a little bit of pressure off of Brown so he can start to focus more on scoring rather than what he does in the paint. But just to give him a little more, but I have been reading that it looks like Jason Tatum has actually been ramping up his workouts from this Achilles injury. Now, you know, it's an Achilles injury, so you really have no idea what to expect, especially because it kind of feels like week to week, every time I read about it, you know, this week there's a positive note on it, but then last week I was reading that he may not play at all this season, and then the week before they're like, oh, he might show up in January, or I mean, he might show up in March, or by the playoffs or something like that, and then now it's he looks like he's going to get called up into the G League, and if that's the case, then that means he's playing. I mean, he's apparently doing some 5-on-5, so they could potentially get Jason Tatum back, but I'm kind of looking at this as that's probably wishful thinking, just kind of how every single week it changes, and I don't know if that's really just the media just kind of playing with things, or if that's just kind of how it is with this injury, where it's just like he moves forward and then he moves backward, or because it is an Achilles injury, you just never know. But and he did get injured in the playoffs last year, so that was basically towards the end of the season, and so these are usually year-long injuries. So I think it's kind of a stretch to think he's going to be back this year, but I mean, at the same time, it kind of feels like there's a possibility he could end up coming back. Then at number 6 on my top 10 NBA power rankings are the Denver Nuggets. Overall record of 34-19. They're 5-5 in their last 10 games. This past week, they lost to the Detroit Pistons, lost to the New York Knicks, and then beat the Chicago Bulls. And Nikola Jokic actually, this is going to be no shocker, but ended up moving up to second all-time on the NBA list with triple-doubles, career triple-doubles. He passed basically the triple-double king, the guy who started it all. Oscar Robertson was basically who started the triple-doubles. And now he only is behind Russell Westbrook. We'll see if he passes them. Russell Westbrook's pretty far up there. It's a pretty difficult record to catch, but I mean, if anybody can do it, it's Jokic, because that dude is obviously the triple-double king, but it's only fitting that he passes Oscar Robertson, because those two, I mean, obviously the three of them, including Russell Westbrook, just that was what they do. I mean, that's currently what Jokic does. That's what Robertson used to do. And then Westbrook, I don't know what the hell happened with him, but he used to do it a lot himself, too. Then at number 7 on my top 10 NBA power rankings of the Houston Rockets, overall record of 32-19. They're 6-4 in their last 10 games. This past week, they beat the Indiana Pacers, lost to the Boston Celtics, lost to the Charlotte Hornets, and then beat the Oklahoma City Thunder. And Shane Goon, man, he has been having a killer week out there on the court. He had a monster triple-double, then he had a monster double-double. He is really... It feels like he's just really starting to get going this season. I mean, he's been hot all year, but it just feels like he's really starting to dominate in a completely different way. So it's going to be interesting to see what kind of a second half he ends up having, just because this team is scoring out of the building. They're having zero issues with scoring. It's really their defense where it's sometimes not as buttoned up as you want it to be. But at the same time, with the way Shane Goon's playing, I mean, he dominates the paint. It's crazy to watch this guy in the paint. And then to also watch him shoot, because you don't really expect a guy like him to have that great of a shot, but he does. I mean, he's right there with Kevin Durant as far as being a great shooter. So definitely he has had a great week out there on the court, and it's going to be interesting to see if he just gets even stronger as the season goes on. Then at number 8 on my top 10 NBA power rankings of the Los Angeles Lakers, overall record of 32-19. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games. This past week, they beat the Brooklyn Nets, the Philadelphia 76ers, and the Golden State Warriors. We did get Austin Reeves back, and it's definitely helped. But unfortunately, Luka Doncic is now injured, so we get one back and we lose one. And you definitely don't want to be losing Luka, but looks like it's probably going to be only one of those things that's going to be keep him out through the All-Star break. And then we'll see what happens after that. But Reeves has come back with the vengeance. Then we also traded for Luke Kennard from the Atlanta Hawks. And I definitely think that's exactly what the Lakers needed, is somebody just like Luke Kennard. He's not like a game-changing dude, but he's definitely got a great three-point shot. And the Lakers have struggled at the three-point line. And that's really – he's definitely going to add a little bit of extra sauce out there at the three-point shot, because it's very unreliable other than Luka when it comes to the three-pointers at this point in time. Then at number 9 on my top 10 NBA power rankings of the Cleveland Cavaliers, overall record of 32-21. They're 8-2 in their last 10 games. This past week, they beat the Clippers and the Sacramento Kings. And I already kind of went over how laughable I think it is that they traded for James Harden and actually traded away Darius Garland for Harden. I mean, Darius Garland to me is absolutely a dude who's got a great future in this league, whereas James Harden is, yes, he plays well still. Not in the playoffs historically, but he still is a solid player, but he's definitely at the end of his career, and he's just not reliable at all, and he's just never happy anywhere he goes. So to me, it just kind of looks like the Cavaliers are his team for now until he gets fed up with them and then wants to be traded away for them or released from them. But I just found it kind of laughable still. Even though they're playing good basketball right now. I mean, I expect him and Mitchell to complement each other well. It's just what's going to happen in the playoffs, and I just thought it was so stupid to trade away Garland, a player who is really good with a bright future, for James Harden. And then rounding out the top 10 NBA power rankings this week, a team we haven't really talked about much, and that is the Philadelphia 76ers, overall record of 30-22. They are 7-3 in their last 10 games. This past week, they beat the Clippers, the Golden State Warriors, lost to the Lakers, and then beat the Phoenix Suns. And I really just like what I'm seeing from this team, especially from Tyrese Maxey, Joel Embiid, and VJ Edgecombe. These three are really having a solid, solid season so far. I mean, Maxey, of course, I mean, he's been one of the most reliable point guards in the league over the last 3 years, and it just kind of feels like he gets overshadowed by everybody else in the league because he's with the 76ers, and they don't really excel that much. But Maxey has just been exceptionally reliable since the day the 76ers have drafted him, and he just really continues to get better every single year. But what I really like is Joel Embiid. He's healthy, and it kind of feels like finally they figured it out this year. They figured, let's start him off slow. Let's work his way into the game and not get him in there too fast. And now that he's in the game, he is dominating like he used to dominate. I really like what I'm seeing from him. He's shooting well. He's dominating the paint. And if Embiid can stay healthy, I really, really, really want to see not only a great second half from him, but I would like to see what he could do in the playoffs and what kind of playoff run he could have, because it's just, that's always been the story of Embiid's career. He's always dominating. He can dominate the regular season. He is such a phenomenal player, but then it's just like he always gets injured like in that first round of the playoffs, or just gets injured at some point in the playoffs, and then it's like we don't even get to see what happens. And I just kind of expect if he's healthy, that he's going to have a great playoff series. And it's nice to see that so far he's healthy and he's dominating, and it kind of feels like every single game he's getting better. He and Maxey are looking good. And then, like I said, Edgecombe, he's their rookie. They basically lucked out getting him because they played so terribly last year. They ended up getting a good spot in the draft and then drafting Edgecombe. And, you know, he's not like blowing everybody out of the water with scoring, but he's just a really... He's taking the edge off of them, you know. His last name's Edgecombe, and he's kind of he's that dude where you can just, if you need him, he is there. He's if you need that scrappy dude in the paint to just kind of jump in there and hopefully get that rebound or just kind of fuck shit up there in the paint, that's Edgecombe. And I really like what I'm seeing from him, and he kind of seems to be progressing as the season wears on as well. So it's actually going to be interesting to see, I think, just kind of his progression over the next 5-ish years, because I kind of feel like he's going to be one of the next dominating players that we see in the league. All right, y'all, enjoy this light week of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Friday.